Reverend Joan Javier Duval began her ministry at the Unitarian Church of Montpelier in August 2015. She previously served as the intern minister and then consulting minister of the Unitarian Society of Germantown here, and as a student chaplain of Advocate Lutheran General Hospital in Park Ridge, Illinois. Reverend Joan was installed as the settled minister of UCM on Sunday, April 3rd, 2016. Her personal theology is influenced by her Roman Catholic roots, historic Unitarianism and Universalism, contemporary progressive Christianity, and engaged Buddhism. She was born and raised in Chicago, Illinois, the daughter of immigrants from the Philippines. She is a 2000 graduate of Swarthmore College from Yale in Swarthmore, Pennsylvania, and earned her Master of Divinity degree in 2012 from Yale Divinity School in New Haven, Connecticut. Reverend Joan, her husband Jarrett, and son Liam have lived in Montpelier since August 2014. Welcome, Reverend Joan and family.
Thank you for that introduction, Helena. It is wonderful to be back here at the Unitarian Society of Germantown and to return to a community that played such an important role in my ministerial formation. It was 1974. A mutual friend had introduced the man who would become my father to a beautiful young woman in her final year of college at the University of the Philippines, who lived just a couple of towns away. My father was immediately smitten from the beginning and began his courtship right away. And he was known to make the walk from his family home in the city to my mother's, which was further out into the country, rain or shine. On one particularly rainy day, he had to make his way over a log, over a washed-out bridge to get to where my mother was. And their courtship continued from afar for 3 years when my father left the Philippines for a job opportunity in the United States. They would exchange letters every week, and the mail delivery person always knew when a letter had arrived from my mother because he said that he could smell the cologne-scented letter in his satchel. So it was in this way that their love developed and that my father proposed to my mother. He returned to the Philippines just 2 weeks before their wedding day to meet with her parents and to seek their blessing, and thus began their now 38 years of marriage. For most of us today, the idea of a long-distance and long-term courtship is quaint and romantic and nostalgic of some bygone era. Our ideas and practices of starting and maintaining loving relationships has changed a lot since my parents' time. And all around us, the forms and the structures for loving relationships are changing. Yet in all of our families, we have these stories that teach us about love. Our families are still the first place that we learn what it means to receive love and to give love in human relationships. Some of these stories teach us lessons that we gladly pass on to future generations, stories of dedication and perseverance, of devotion and fidelity. Some of these stories have caused us deep wounds and call on us to create new lessons of love. We carry all of these stories with us as we seek to create loving relationships, both inside and outside of our families, with friends, lovers, partners, spouses, with our children, siblings, parents. In all of these relationships, we grapple with how to love each other well, and in a way that brings us the joy and the fulfillment that we know love can. In this time when so much of our mental and emotional energy these days is directed towards engaging in our public life together, I think it's especially important to pay attention to and to reinvest in our personal relationships as places where we can practice how to care for one another, how to love one another, how to forgive, and how to regain trust with one another. In our relationships, we experience both of the kinds of love that John Wellwood describes in our reading: absolute love, the perfect love that we can know in our heart, and relative love, the imperfect ways that it is embodied in our relationships. Absolute love, or unconditional love, is that feeling of love that we yearn for. That love we feel in those first stages of a budding romance when our heart seems to be bursting with the sheer beauty of another's presence. It's a love that we feel when we gaze into the eyes of a newborn child or grandchild and respond without any reservations or judgments about that new life. According to Wellwood, absolute love is perfect love in the sense that it exists on its own without judgment or fear or anxiety. Absolute love is also the notion of love that I think we tend to hold up as an ideal. It's a notion of love that we use to set our expectations. I know, especially in my younger days, I attached a lot of shoulds to the idea of perfect, unconditional love. It was the way I should feel all the time with someone if I truly love them, or if they truly loved me. The folk rock duo The Indigo Girls sing about this kind of love in their song Love's Recovery, which we heard earlier in the service. There I am in younger days, stargazing, painting picture-perfect maps of how my life and love would be, not counting the unmarked paths of misdirection, my compass, faith in love's perfection, I missed 10 million miles of road I should have seen. I eventually learned that perfect love wasn't a very good compass. If I tried to navigate my relationships with the compass of love's perfection as the sole guide, then I was bound to get a bit lost along the way. As you probably know and have experienced in your own lives, relative love is the more regularly and commonly felt love in our relationships. This love is inconstant. It fluctuates with our moods or with another person's actions or reactions. It is in constant flux as our own needs and wounds interact with the dynamic nature of other people's personalities. Darn them for having their own unique personalities, right? As a parent, I've been learning a lot about these different kinds of love. There are many moments of pure, unconditional love when I can look at my son and my heart is just full of pure love and appreciation for the being that he is and that he's becoming. But there are also those times when I am just tired and impatient, or he needs more than I feel like I can give. And at those times, I almost have to remind myself that I am a loving person and that love for my son resides in me somewhere. That pure, unconditional, and open-hearted, absolute love is really what I would like to feel most of the time. Yet in our relationships, we don't always give and receive love in ways that match that absolute love that we carry in our hearts or that we yearn for. With those who know us most intimately, we can sometimes be the most hurtful. When we enter deeper loving relationships, more of our stuff just comes up. The debris of our heart channel, as John Wellwood describes it, our fears, our wounds, our defensive patterns, all of these show up regularly in our most intimate relationships. And there are many ways that this can manifest. You might find yourself getting a bit snappy with a sibling who always seems to suggest that your strategies for parenting aren't working. Or you find yourself feeling hurt that your partner has forgotten your birthday or an important occasion, and you give her the cold shoulder for the rest of the day. Or yet again, you find yourself in the same argument with your mother that you seem to be in for years and years, or substitute whoever it is that person is for you. One of the defensive patterns that shows up pretty regularly for me in my relationships is feeling defensive about mistakes. And here I'm going to share something about my spouse who's in the room, and I'm sure can attest to the truth of this. A question from my spouse about why I did a particular household task the way that I did can sometimes result in a volcano of reaction erupting suddenly and without much thought. And this emotional spewing is usually followed, sometimes a few minutes later, by my apologizing for the irrational response and asking forgiveness. It's so often the case that our loving relationships are fraught with pain and imperfections. And it's not just in our families that the debris of our heart channels are evident. In any setting where we are developing and building relationships rooted in love, we encounter the shadow side of love. The anxiety, the disappointment, the anger. We can encounter love's imperfections in our friendships, in our workplaces, and even in our religious communities, in our churches where we strive to build beloved community. The same dynamic comes into play. In all the churches that I have been a part of, there have been times when my love for the community was so clear, when my heart just felt filled with gratitude. And there have been times when I've been hurt by something someone has said or done, or that I've just needed to take an emotional time out from a discussion that was pushing my buttons. Building loving community is a human endeavor, and so is inevitably filled with both times of utter joy and also rife with great disappointment and hurt. Loving others in a way that builds meaningful and joyful connection is challenging in all the spheres of life. And it's especially challenging when our desire to live with our hearts wide open is met with the reality of the imperfect ways that we express that love to others. So what do we do with that reality? How do we skillfully navigate love's imperfections? John Wellwood suggests that bringing absolute love into human form involves learning to hold the impossibility of ourselves and others in the way that the sky holds clouds, with gentle spaciousness and equanimity. Instead of clamping down and resisting or fighting the flaws that we see in ourselves and others, we can approach them with gentleness and non-judgment. Usually, in those times when I get a bit snappy with my spouse, I'm most able to make a shift in my response when I stop for a moment to check in with myself, when I take time to notice with compassion what's really going on. When we hold the impossibility of ourselves and others with gentle spaciousness and equanimity, we're able to see each other in a different light. That different light is often only possible with forgiveness. The theologian Reinhold Niebuhr said that the final form of love is forgiveness. And as Unitarian Universalist minister Robert Eller Isaacs writes, beginning again in love requires that we forgive ourselves and each other. For each time our fears have made us rigid and inaccessible, for the selfishness which sets us apart and alone, for falling short of the admonitions of the Spirit, we forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love. Indeed, when we're able to forgive, we see each other, we see in each other our very humanness, and we can feel more of that absolute love. And when we feel absolute love or unconditional love, we can feel our hearts open. There's a sense of peace and freedom. In this state of love, you can see the goodness of others and your own goodness more clearly. In her book, Radical Acceptance, Embracing Your Life with the Heart of the Buddha, Tara Brach shares the story of Matt. Matt loved his mother dearly, but he found himself pushed away by her insecurity and her neediness, and he moved all the way to the other side of the country, partly to get away from her. He would visit her regularly and always showed up when he was needed, but he would feel himself creating distance, pulling away from her embrace or keeping certain parts of his life to himself. Matt reached a critical juncture after he had flown to see his mother, who was supposedly dying for the sixth time in 3 years. For the sixth time, she miraculously recovered and begged him to stay. And Matt was a regular meditator, and it was at this time that he began to practice loving kindness for himself and his mother, that meditative practice we did earlier. He practiced wishing his mother happiness, safety, health, and peace. And slowly, over time, he began to feel his heart soften, and he began to remember those things that he appreciated about his mother. By the time that the call came that his mother was critically ill and certain to die in a few days, Matt felt that something had shifted. As he flew east again to see her, he resolved to let go of his old habits of pushing her away so that he could feel the same love for her face to face that he felt during those meditative practices. When he arrived at the hospital, he found his mother in great pain. For 5 days, he sat by her side, holding her hand, silently repeating his prayers of loving kindness. And on the fifth night, it hit him that this was really it. His mother was really dying. And as he gazed at her and listened to her labored breathing, he didn't see the needy person trying to get something from him or the fearful person demanding reassurance. He simply saw her as a being that wanted to be loved. And he lowered the railing of her bed and leaned over and gently surrounded her small, bony body in his arms. He told her over and over that he loved her, that love was there for her. Matt received a call from the hospital at 7 a.m. the next morning telling him that his mother had passed away. And he knew that she had finally been released with the blessing of uncomplicated, pure love. It is our true nature to love and to be loved. May we find that gentle spaciousness to hold ourselves and others with kindness so that we might find joyful connection even in love's imperfections. May it be so. Blessed be.